It's not complicated. Call it creative. Call it art. Call it design. It's the Design Coach on Lake 96.1.
Oh my gosh, good morning everyone. You're listening to the Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sisano. Good morning, Nancy. How are you?
I'm good.
How do you like the guava refresher?
Oh wait, I haven't tasted it.
Okay. This is Dunkin' Donuts.
Ooh, I like
guava
it.
Guava refresher. Pretty good, right?
Oh yeah.
So for those of you who don't...
I'm a big fruity drink girl. So.
Well, for those of you who don't know, I try to hydrate my team and feed my teams, whether it's radio or in the studio, on a regular basis. So
I love it.
That's
it's
my
good.
Offer.
I like this.
I, however, because of the wonderful Midwest weather, have made the return of the shacket for early May. It was really warm when I returned back from it. Yeah, see, you're on it too.
Yep.
Plaid Palooza here in the studio today, which makes me happy. But
does it really?
What?
Does it really make you happy that we've had to reverse engineer the clothing for the season? Should we really be having?
Okay, that's a really loaded question for me because right now I'm trying to lose like a good 15 pounds. So like when I start to put on the layers actually help me feel better about myself.
Oh, okay. Well,
okay. So I'm like, I think there's a lot of people in that camp right now. So
maybe
the more layers that I can, you know, I can faux the fat that I know that I need to lose. I mean, listen, I'm not saying that I feel like I'm in relatively decent shape.
I don't know where you're losing. I don't know where this is coming from.
Listen, we don't have to get into specifics on the radio. And thank God it is radio. but I will tell you that that the return of the shacket was welcomed for me because I don't mind the cooler weather. And when I was in California, you know, last week visiting my son, you know, you get that maritime coastal. So we're in the Monterey area, in the Bay Area. You know, nothing really rises above a certain temperature. Nothing gets below a certain temperature, and everything is misty, right? But we were afforded 2 days. One day, like, kind of came out of nowhere. It was one of those days where nobody saw it coming. We played one of the best courses in the country in Spyglass Hills.
Oh yeah,
was a fantastic day with a great caddy, and we just had a wonderful time. It was one of those bucket list items that, you know, I've been golfing with Luke since he was, you know, very very young.
Really?
Yeah. So for us to take the opportunity to do that with him was really special.
Can I just say that I didn't realize you were a golfer?
Oh, you didn't?
Well,
just one of the many layers, Nancy, that is added to the milieu of the Design Coach.
Yeah.
I mean,
I love it. It's a game I grew up playing. I'm so thankful for, you know, my dad teaching me that game. It's given me some wonderful life lessons. My experience as a caddy, caddying for roughly 10 years at a private course in Highland Park, Illinois, I credit that actually with the foundation of my understanding of anticipating high-end service.
I'm just trying to figure out at what point in your day you have the time to go play 18 holes of golf.
I don't during the day.
So you just play at night?
It was on the weekend or after hours. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I was like,
I'm not one of those like, hey, team, go do design. I got a tea time at 7. Like, I don't have time for tea times during the week most
weeks.
And I
also don't think your team goes and does design.
Yeah, well,
it's a little more intricate than that.
Yeah, exactly. It is a team collaborative effort.
But we're
going to
talk about that today.
We're going to talk about experience level. And it's funny that you bring that up because our caddy at Spyglass Hills was an extremely experienced looper. For those of you who don't know, that's the term for caddy, looper.
Okay. I did not know.
And
that.
He gave the best reads on the greens. He gave us... It really added to the experience. If you've never had the opportunity to walk a golf course with a caddy, highly recommended, especially an experienced one, because I can tell you that it really does add to the golfing experience. If you can afford to do it, it's worth doing.
Yeah.
More importantly, it was just great quality time, you know, with Luke.
If I had that caddy, would he actually hit the ball for me too?
Well, listen, I've been asked to do that when I was a looper. They would do caddy bets, and they would have the caddies see who could get closest to the pin, and they would bet on our performance.
Right.
From time to time, that did happen at the private club.
Okay, because I have never played golf, and so I would actually need the caddy to play the game for me.
I have to say—
Maybe I would carry his clubs.
I have to tell you, between my experience my limited experience playing football, contact football, and playing golf, you know, the life lessons of both of those sports. I mean, listen, part of the reason my business is named The Design Coach mm-hmm. is because of my love of coaching 10-year-olds. No, I'm not kidding you. And realizing how to align a team. And I do make references, I make references all the time with my team about the alignment of different positions within a team and how those teams need to work together. And football, you know, contact football really is one of those sports that is the ultimate, it is the ultimate foundation for understanding alignment, mm-hmm. positions, positioning, responsibilities. It really is just football is, you know, minus the contact piece, is actually a really beautiful game. You know, when you start to really dissect it and you start to get into how all of the players are all interconnected right. to succeed, it's fascinating because there's a lot of life lessons there, which is fascinating because I'm trying to make these references and I have a team of all women, mostly women, right? And some of them have some football knowledge and experience and some of them sure. do not. So it's interesting to sort of talk that through and sort of illustrate that to gain their understanding and then pivot to something else. I use a lot of analogies and a lot of personal analogies because my experience level, which we're going to talk about today, this concept of experience and how you can leverage it to your benefit.
You don't make them wear shoulder pads, do you? Because that is like totally
no, some days
style.
I think they think I should.
No.
I'm sure a helmet.
That's totally
a helmet some days would probably
be. We don't need shoulder pads, and please don't bring shoulder pads back.
Yeah, I know. Well, oh, you mean like shoulder pads
actual
in the blazers?
Clothing shoulder pads.
No,
yes.
No. I thought you meant literal football shoulder pads.
No, they don't need that.
No, but it does
these
seem.
These girls are tough.
Listen, our business protective gear is not a horrible thing. Okay. I'm just saying.
True, but they're
on
tough.
On some level. But as we sort of explore this topic, I was just sort of thinking about experience across the board and how much the leveraging of it or the ignoring of it has played a pivotal role in my development as both a business person, an entrepreneur, and as an artist and a creative. You know, at The Design Coach, that is one of the things that we blend together every day is this synthesis at The Design Coach of, you know, what does it mean to be an entrepreneur and a business person? And what we think right now is a model that is innovative in the industry, a very different model, a very different way to think of an interior design firm and a project management firm. What that also means to be sort of a project and a financial steward with the size projects that we work on. So there has to be all of these components that blend together. And I was just thinking about all the different experiences that I've had and the people who have shared that knowledge with me and how important that was, even if at the time they were sharing it, I didn't really totally grasp it.
Right.
Man, I do now. I do now. And it didn't mean that, I mean, I've always been I've always been a relationship learner. Does that make sense? I hope that makes sense to you because, you know, some people call it, you mentioned off ear before we started the show because we were talking about the topic, street smart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've always been somebody who learned through doing,
right?
Learned through seeing, and learned through the relationship of whatever that was, whether it was a relationship with a project, which you can have. Artists know that you can,
of course,
you can have a relationship with a canvas, which I do on a daily basis. It's a love hate, right? Relationship with canvases sure. and mm-hmm. and projects, and then you have relationships with people, obviously. And I think that those two perspectives have really played a pivotal role in my, I don't know, I think my
growth,
it's such a big concept for me to wrap my brain on. And I really wanted to pick it apart on today's show because experience matters. It does matter, but it's also about where it matters and when it matters. And when you don't have that experience, how you can still contribute through effort. And when someone's lack of experience causes them pause. See, I've been seeing that a lot, that this industry of expertise, as I'll call it, it'll be the industry of, now listen, you're going to find this politically, you're going to find this in every industry, every institution.
Mm-hmm.
There are people that use their experience level as a way to gatekeep and keep people out who don't have either a similar thought or a similar belief system,
sure.
or a similar point of view, and they use sometimes experience as well. Like I said, they gatekeep with it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, well, you don't have the experience, so I'm seeing it correctly and you're seeing it incorrectly.
Right.
It's the comment that I made, you know, more recently that it's very arrogant that people who have created so much mess in so many industries are then have the arrogance to tell you that they're the only ones that can clean it up. Which I think is hilarious and frightening simultaneously.
Right.
It's both hilarious and frightening simultaneously. So right. There needs to be a new vision. And I have said for some time, and I'm really starting to feel it right now, Nancy, I'm starting to feel that the Renaissance period, including how fast AI is going to accelerate, faster than I think any of us really realize. It's not going to be this slow software improvement that where they're going to issue a 2.0 like we're used to, like, mm-hmm. you know, when, you know what I'm saying? Like we're used to version 1.0 and 2.0 and 3.0 and there's minor changes that we can, this is not going to be like that. Nope. This is going to be, it's going to accelerate even faster where they believe that a lot of the systems that are going to be out there will be the smartest element on the planet and it won't be human. And so where I'm going with this is this context of experience and the difference between experience and knowledge. And then experience, knowledge, and wisdom, which are different things.
Different worlds.
Well, different right. worlds. And I think it's going to, you're going to have to understand where all of those things play within executing projects like the ones that we're executing right now on the new build side, on the remodeling side, on all of those things.
Well, the reference that I made was you can be street smart and you can be book smart. And you can be both.
You can be both, sure.
But just because you read about it, just because you studied it, just because you went
but
to
I'll add
school.
A, I'll add a third one.
Uh-huh.
People smart.
Well,
see,
yes.
street and people not exactly the same.
No.
You know, there's a lot of people who I know who are street smart, but it seems to be somewhat of a, from a protectionist position. They're street smart because they're self-aware. They're situationally aware.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't necessarily understand the impact of their street smartness and how maybe that can keep them from collaborating because it can be a self, again, I said a self-preservation
sure.
mindset. Like, I'm street smart so I don't get taken advantage of.
Right.
Okay? Versus being street smart to be able to share that. I'm going to call it like alley cat kind of like knowledge and wisdom.
Right.
And push that downward in some way.
Well, what I'm thinking is street smart as in I've done it, not just learned it.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that in there lies this sort of really blended definition of experience. And I've just been fascinated as I begin to move through all of the different components of the design coach and all of the different ways that our new model is going to be able to connect with clients. Share knowledge and share wisdom, how all of those things begin to interconnect. And on today's show, I want to explore the concept of experience, knowledge, and wisdom. What's the difference, when to apply it, and how you can benefit from it to not only design the rooms that you want, but design the life you've always dreamed of. Stay with us. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Link 96.1. Good morning, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sassano, and brought to you by Laser Electric and Supply, our wonderful sponsor. And also, you can find us on Spotify. So we're talking about experience today on the radio. It's interesting because when you talk about what does that really mean, wow, it's really loaded when you unpack it. Like, there's a lot of stuff in there. And it's interesting, you know, when you talk about the application of experience, I have learned that over the years, when you have said to someone, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. That's an adage that you do hear, right? In other words, that is a reference to, are you surrounding yourself with people who can elevate you mm-hmm. because their experience is either more or different to get a more complete perspective, a better perspective, an enhanced perspective? Are you surrounding yourself with those people? I've been very fortunate where I've always had older mentors.
Yeah.
Like I go back to probably earlier, you know, other than my parents who were fantastic. They were really good. I'm going to give them a lot of credit here. They were at my core. They were very good at sharing feedback. They were very good at feedback, but they were also very good at exposing the why. Like, why, at your core, this is an important thing for you to do.
Right.
And why do you keep doing the same things you're doing, Philip Joseph? Why do you keep doing those things and testing the boundaries the way that you are? Well, that was just me. But I was I had the benefit of some wonderful coaches and teachers. And I think without their experience and also their ability not to really coach in me and not make me feel shamed for the boundary testing, but to tell me and to share with me why the boundary testing wasn't maybe the right application in this instance. Because boundary testing as a youth is actually, you know, that's an interesting thing, right? Because you don't want to, like, if you're not testing boundaries, I don't know that you're really growing.
I'm gonna
that goes throughout the history of your life.
I'm going to say, as a mother, it starts with the terrible twos.
Well, it starts early, that's for sure. But
but the word, like what you're describing, the word that kept popping into my head was freedom. You were allowed the freedom.
I was. I mean, I'm going to speak from my experience, not my siblings, but I felt as though, I mean, listen, my father and my mother allowed me to go to art school. Right. And the only thing that they said to me was, well, you better find a way to make a living at it, or you better find a way to contribute to society in a meaningful way. Okay.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be an artist and that's a part of that, that's great. But what else?
Mm-hmm.
And so they always gave me, in instilling the work ethic, you know, when I think about the people in my life that have built me, helped build me.
Yeah.
You know, if I think about that, like, it's a really great, cool, large Mount Rushmore.
Sure.
It's a very large Mount Rushmore. And I would encourage you to do this activity if you're thinking about the people who have built you. And sometimes the people who have built you just tried to do their best. You know, it's not that they were perfect. And it's not that every piece of advice that they gave you was great. It's just that I think that the people who tried to do it with the right intention, I think that that's where it starts. And I think when we talk about experience level, I think we always have to consider how the information is being conveyed, okay? Because it doesn't always sound great, okay?
Right.
What they're trying to convey and what's the spirit behind it.
Right.
And we're so sensitive to tone that sometimes we miss the words and we miss the meaning quite a bit, you know? I mean, our current president is absolutely an example of that. Where it doesn't always sound great coming out.
Right.
Does not always sound great coming out.
Right.
All right. I would not put statesman at the top of that. Okay. That's not where I would put that. But if you can get behind the support, the meaning, the intention of it,
The outcome.
And I think you get a better read. I mean, listen, Bill Maher said that very same thing, right? Like, you're in person, and that person on the exterior and that person on the interior might be two different people, but it could also be, a condition of the situation, meaning you're in politics. That's a battle every day.
Right.
Okay. And we've seen where being nice gets people, and we've seen where being tough gets people, and we've seen where being fanatical gets people. So we've seen all of this play out recently in a very profound way and a very visible way, I might add. And so as I nothing in my world at the Design Coach is done in a vacuum of life. You know, I said this all the time. Like, I live the problems my clients face in their design. I live it too, and I'm trying to solve those problems for myself and my family, and have been doing that for the better part of 25 years, right?
Right.
And I love it, but I don't think that I would be where I am without the people who have taken the time and effort to share the experience, knowledge, and wisdom, but not do it in such a way where it was meant to demean, gatekeep, but it was meant to try to improve me. And I think that's where I think, you know, when we talk about the relationship with clients that we have when we try to build these big things with them, or you try to do design on your own, there can be an over-reliance on the experience because you've never done it before and you put too much experience in the wrong place.
Right.
We're going to talk about that a little bit. You can turn your contractor into a designer, and that's not where they should be.
Right.
Okay. You can turn your designer into a contractor, and that's not necessarily where they should be, right? And you can turn both of them into architects, and you shouldn't make them do that either, okay? Like, there's a reason you build a good design-build team
right.
with the skill sets and experience that in in the totality get you what you need. The problem is people look for one place to go to get all of that information, and they over rely on the experience from one perspective. That sets the table for this discussion. Is the first thing that you need to be doing is you need to be saying, if I only took the opinion of one of my coaches through life, they all have very different life experiences. I'm going to tell you that, you know, my mentor in college was very different than my mentor at the Caddy Shack.
Yeah.
Okay. Elliot and Steve were very different people. Like, couldn't be more opposite. Yet, their perspectives all played a role in helping give me a well-rounded understanding of when I was doing this way, this was a liability. But when you do it this way, you've turned that into an asset. And sometimes it was the same skill set.
Right.
Right? It was, you know, my candor, young, was sass. Now the candor is a currency on which my clients really appreciate the unvarnished.
Yeah.
Provided that it's done from the right intent and it's done respectfully, but they still want it to be direct. Whereas maybe when you're younger, that sass comes out snarky and it comes out, right? Like it comes from a more defensive posture, whereas now it doesn't come from a defensive posture, obviously. But
you're just saving time.
Right. But it's the But in the refinement of that through life is the magic. Okay? And so what I am constantly aware of on my team is because I have people on my team at all different experience levels, and they have different experiences as well and different skill sets that they bring. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to do a better job being a coach internally, and have been on this journey now for about, I'm going to say, really hardcore, really top of mind for me for about 2 years.
Yeah.
Actually robbing from my parenting coaching, right, with my kids to say, oh, you know what? That's really the same conversation. You just can't treat them like a child.
Right.
Right? And there was a point, and every parent knows this, there is a point where you're like, oh, I can't really speak to them that way anymore. Like, it just doesn't work.
Right.
Like, all of a sudden, it doesn't resonate. And the mistake people make is thinking that they just keep putting that gas pedal down mm-hmm. with the same way to coach, and that they don't have to change the tone, the messaging. And in my kid's case, it was treat them like an adult, maybe younger. Like, right. be more, you know, share your experience in a much more unvarnished way at 13. Don't wait till 18.
Well, it's hard to tell your 20-year-old because I said so. Which mm-hmm. is how you got away with it all through middle school.
Yeah, because.
Or elementary school.
Because right? I said so is no longer like valid.
Nope.
Right. And at some point, probably even younger than that, it's better not to go through I'm not asking you to put together PowerPoints and flashcards, okay, to explain your reasoning. Sometimes as a parent, you don't need to do that.
I mean, sometimes it is simply because you said so, but you're right. The same growth process has to happen with your team as you move forward in your projects.
Okay, now apply that to projects for a moment, okay?
Right.
Apply that to a builder or a remodeler. And where I walk through this conversation with an interesting perspective is that I've been both. And I've seen it from the homeowner side, I've seen it from the subcontractor side, I've seen it from the art side, I've seen it from all these different angles. And so I've been in those shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you ask your contractor or you ask your builder for an opinion on something, you have to ask the right types of questions sometimes to elicit the reservoir of experience that they may offer. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you guys two examples. One, new builds require upfront planning, but very little problem solving. Everything is, you try to know the knowns.
Right.
In a new build up front.
Right.
Okay. Minus something hidden under the ground. Okay. Which I've experienced that as well. Sometimes you hit a reserve of water that you didn't even know was there. That's very common here in Geneva Lake. And you've got a river running through the basement of the foundation. Right?
Oh, lovely.
Sometimes that happens.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm saying is that, you know, in new builds, there's less problem solving.
Much more foreseeable.
Well, the problem solving happens on paper prior.
Right.
When you're doing a remodel, there's lots of unknowns, especially when you're trying to assimilate a new structure with an old structure. And so asking the experience that a particular remodeler or builder has within the remodel space and the new build space and where their wheelhouse is, quote unquote, is a very important question, because you cannot assume that the person that specializes in new builds is really a good problem solver when it comes to remodeling.
Right.
In fact, remodeling is one of the things that a lot of new, when builders get bigger, they grow from contractor to remodeler to doing new homes. When they grow in that, there's a hesitancy sometimes to go back to remodeling because they feel like it's a step down. Okay? Not only in project size, but also in complexity.
Mm-hmm.
Remodels, especially large remodels, are very complex.
No.
It's way easier to tear the house down. You know this. It's way easier, which is why, if you ask the opinion, which has been asked on a number of projects recently, should I tear it down or should I build new? The answer from the guy, from the person that's doing new builds, is most inevitably tear it down.
Right.
Okay. Now, depending on the situation and depending on what the lifestyle needs are of the client and what they're looking to try to achieve, I have seen that be a valid recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've seen it be a wildly invalid recommendation. Okay. In other words, the experience level that you're seeking is dependent upon where they're comfortable, where they've built their knowledge and experience. Maybe they weren't a particularly successful remodeler, and new builds they could wrap their brain around easier, and it was easier to staff. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about how do you begin to parse out, when you're doing large projects and you're doing interior design, where the experience matters and where it does not. Stay with us. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. I have been reminded that it's segment 3, everyone. Good morning. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sasson.
The reason why I remind you, especially in this particular...
Oh, no, I know exactly why you remind me. It's totally fine.
As I listen, this could be an 8-segment topic.
I know.
Because there are so many facets where there's such a huge difference, again, between knowledge or even perceived knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
And experience, and like, there's a lot you could pack in.
Yeah, and I'm gonna tell you too. Like, as we broach sort of the next chapter in this, right? That's in segment 3. As we move off of builder, remodeler, and we move towards designer, architect, and the different people that you're trying to, the different professionals that you're trying to, put together to leverage all of this experience, and where some of the pitfalls are. And you're right. We're only scratching the surface
right.
of this. But what I will tell you is that it really does, you really do want to kick the tires, and you do really want to ask the questions about the types of projects that they've worked on. And that's across the board. You know, there are architects that are fantastic at coming up with creative remodels to make the new structure blend with the old structure, and what does that look like? And then there are architects that's less of a strong suit for them.
Or they just don't want the challenge.
Maybe. Or maybe they've just set up their professional signature to be like, this is what we do.
Right.
Right? And so therefore, they're not always the greatest fit. But on the part of the consumer, when you think architect versus architect, they don't all do the same things.
No.
And remodelers and builders don't all do the same things the same way. There just isn't one way to do something.
No.
Okay? Now, there are building standards, and there's obviously, there are best practices, but those best practices can vary from region to region, depending on the climate in which you're building, depending on the region with which you're building. Right. Like, it's different, right? Like, the same types of windows and doors for a California climate might be different for winter climates.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the window manufacturers would be like, it's a great window. They're like, of course, we get it. It's a great window. But I'm going to tell you that the windows that we have down that are hurricane rated in Florida, you wouldn't need those windows up north.
Right.
We're not trying to, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
That's a seasonal consideration.
Yeah.
And so there are many, many, many regional variances that have to be accounted for in the experience level. And I don't know that the consumer, when they're putting the team together, asks enough of those questions.
And that doesn't necessarily, you're not necessarily talking about huge regions across the country.
Hmm.
It's different in a lake home.
Oh, gosh, it's different.
Versus a farmhouse remodel.
This is where when I can get 3 contractors to look at the same project, and I'll get 3 different strategies.
Completely different answers.
Strategies.
Sure. Yeah.
And they're gonna give you those strategies through their lens. I was just talking to a client with whom I'm going to meet actually today, a potential client, and they were interviewing builders, and I said, back off. I said, I need the best piece of advice at this juncture I can give you is don't have those conversations yet without a design plan. Mm-hmm. Because you have a lot of moving parts to your project that can be solved with decoration and design build. The builder is not going to take into consideration the decoration pieces that will solve some of these problems, and only going to come at you through the design build lens. That's a very important thing for me to stress on today's show, is that the experience level, or the experience knowledge that you're going to get, or the sharing of the experience that you're going to get, will vary based on how they've built that experience and where they've had success and failure. You want to figure that out. You want to have that discussion. Please don't just look at the pretty pictures, because the pretty pictures on their websites and on Instagram only show the end result and not who was really involved in making that decision. Sometimes you have a really great designer that fills in the void for the builder. Sometimes you have a great builder and an architect that fills in a designer that's just being hired to decorate and not do the design build, right? The understanding the calculus of how the picture that you're seeing in your feed really comes together is part of this discussion this morning.
Well, it goes back to, do you want a house that you told them you wanted, or do you want a house that they told you you wanted?
Well, I think that that's an interesting question, but I think that sometimes the answer is they hire a builder because they like the houses they build and they like the look.
Of course.
And that's valid. In my industry, in my industry, the falling in love with, I love the way they do what they do and I want that, is very, it's valid, right? Some clients just want easy button. I like what they do. I'm going to let them drive the bus. I'll share my lifestyle preferences within the build. And I know that I'm going to get something that I love.
Yeah.
Now, here's what that leads to on my end from my perspective. It does lead to a home that looks like a lot of other people's homes. And I just have a, listen, my perspective is your home's too important. And that if you're going to get a legacy heirloom build, it should be uniquely yours.
Right.
And that you should be stretching the experience level of your team to get the information that you need to build the home that you want. That's the danger in all of the trades being underneath one umbrella. So if you're a design build, architecture, and interior design firm, which is a very popular model because they get all the business, which is fine, it just doesn't lead to something that's really important, which is creative independence. It's the same thing with any monopoly.
Right.
Right? If you believe that creative competition is beneficial in the marketplace, which I believe it is, provided that that you can pull off the stuff that you're recommending, right? Which I get challenged on all the time. Mm-hmm. But because I've pulled it off in multiple states, I know it's possible. So I'm able to call proverbial contracting CYA.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And BS within the conversations. Right. Can I say that on the radio?
Yeah.
I just did. but I'm just saying, like, I'm able to tactfully have the discussion about why something's possible creatively, right, even though I know the contractor might not have done it before. And then at the same time, I'm then dedicated to coaching it up because I know it's the best creative solution and lifestyle solution for the client. Well, I have to tell you that if you're not looking at it through the lens of asking the right questions up front, and I'm going to apply this lens now to architect. We'll talk about designer in the last segment, mm-hmm, but from an architectural perspective, I love right now that I'm working with Addis Architecture, who Jacob is the guy that's doing my building.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I love that he's a former framer and that he's built his knowledge and his experience level with the belt on.
Right.
I really love that because there is a real nuts and bolts approach that he brings to the table. And then there's the architects that bring a more artistic view of it. Well, in the complexion of my relationships, I don't know that I need the artists because we supply that in the calculus of our partnerships.
Right.
It's nice to work with artistic architects who have great visions, but not at the detriment of, when is overbuilding and when is over designing. And that's led to a lot of things in the marketplace where, you get exorbitant architectural fees, slow timelines to develop the home. We talked a few shows ago about that pre-architectural phase.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to bring that to the table this week, and we immediately went into roofline conversation and elevations. I mean, it cut weeks out of a process where we would have had meeting upon meeting upon meeting upon meeting about the ingredients of the dish instead of like the dish. And now we're able to go to the client with something a little bit more substantial, a little faster. That's already been vetted from a lifestyle perspective by the client. It was almost like a reverse engineering of the architectural process a little bit.
Right.
I don't know that that's the right strategy for every client. It's the right strategy for this client. And I feel like there's a lot of value in that conversation moving forward. But in your architect, if they don't really have a nuts and bolts approach to how to actually fit the puzzle pieces together, I think that you're fighting a next step, which is I'm going to put together something that works and then I have to send it out for engineering. And then all of a sudden you're like, to cross that span, you're going to need steel here, steel here, steel here, which then raises the cost of the home. Mm-hmm. Like there is really tangible financial, okay?
Consequences
right. to the experience level that the entire team can bring or can't bring.
But then how do you find it?
Okay, by asking the right questions.
Right.
If you have an architect that's primarily good at just doing new builds and that remodels and integration of existing spaces, they don't have a proven track record of successful integration, or they've graduated out of that and it doesn't really get them excited, that's a red flag for me. You know, as I've said before, new builds are easy. I hate it. Like they just are. Like you plug in, the spaces are defined. You figure it out. You put the space. Like I'm oversimplifying it, of course, for the purposes of today's.
But nothing's going to be a surprise, you said. Unless it's under the ground.
Shouldn't be, unless you haven't thought it out on paper.
Well,
whereas in remodels, that's not the case.
No.
In remodeling, you're going to find out where there are transition points that you have to account for, and they do take a certain amount of problem solving. I would say the one thing that has been so beneficial in any of the mentors that I have had in my development have been that they are not just sharing their experience, they're teaching me to actively problem solve and how they've overcome similar situations, even if those situations have been in different industries.
Sure.
And we discount that. We discount the fact that the way to overcome something in some way because you're in that industry doesn't really apply to my industry. You hear that a lot.
Right.
What I'm finding is problem solving, people are people, and technical is industry specific. Technical is industry specific. But strategy, process, people management, pretty much the same.
Right.
Pretty much the same. Clarity is king. Enthusiasm, when paired with experience and passion, isn't beatable. Okay?
Right.
And so, you know, we fight in our partners to try to get them to sort of understand that that's what we're trying to do. I will tell you, the clients that shy away from the clarity, watch out. The partners that shy away from the clarity, watch out. Okay?
Because they're not up for the challenge.
Well, period. No, they're fearful of accountability.
Right.
Listen, the client on some level is accountable to their own project.
Of course.
That means they have to dedicate the time. If you want to do big things, take some big time. You got to make the time. That's the thing. Okay? If we need to find a way to make that possible for you, then that's the problem solving that I think, at least at the design coach, we have different clients that love delivery of information differently or in different ways with different cadence and different timing. What we try to do with the design coach is we try to tailor that just enough so we don't like chop up our process, right? Our proven process, but we're able to morph it so that it can be delivered in a way where the clients can assimilate it and get them to make good decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's life is complex and different. You know, when we talk about this architectural, I think that's often overmissed because I think that people think that when you sign on with an architect, that they all have the same skill sets and the same abilities. And nothing could be further from the truth.
Right.
They, like the contractors, have a different way of looking at the same canvas.
Right.
Okay? So asking the questions, here's the problem that I have that I'm trying to solve as a homeowner. What experience do you have in solving those problems? Can you share those with me? If they can't, find someone who can. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about how the designer plays into this and how the designer links it all together, okay? When it comes to layering the experience that gets you a successful creative outcome. Stay with us. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to segment number 4 here of The Design Coach.
Yeah, for this segment.
On Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sassano. We're talking about experience. And again, I know we're just giving a really high level, you know, sometimes marginally granular view on this. But I think it's an important discussion for us to have, because I think if you've been one of those people that's trying to trust the experience level of a contractor, of an architect, or even of a designer, you find that it's always, as is the is human nature, it's just skewed from their level of their track record of success and failure in certain areas. And I talked earlier in the show about how I've benefited from all of these different mentors who have shared with me ways to problem solve. Because there's always one, more than one way to do it. And then the articulation of it. I've had some very, and listen, the articulation is not always eloquent. I'm here to tell you that, like, articulation sounds fancy, but the articulation can be really blunt and really direct. And I have had a really great mix of both. Right?
Sometimes there's not a lot of bedside manner there.
Yeah, but that's actually okay in a lot of situations.
Yeah.
Because having, you know, one of the things that we bring to the table that I love about my particular skill set, and I do really appreciate this in myself, is my ability to go high-level executive conversation and then in the same 30 seconds break it down for the contractor.
Right.
Because I have both of those perspectives. And so being able to go high and swoop low to be able to get the alignment that I need is really, really something that, like, that's one of the skill sets I bring to my team, is the ability to be like, here's how it plays out on the macro. Here's how it plays in practical application.
Right.
At the contracting level, let's talk both. And I'm fluid and I have enough experience to be able to do both. And that's my value. And it has taken me a while to really figure out, you know, with this team, because I thought my value was everywhere. I'm learning that my value is not everywhere now. In fact, other people are bringing value that I could not have even imagined to certain parts and elements of this client experience.
Right.
And they're just better at it than I am. And I love that. I love that we've created the opportunity. I love that they're servicing the client. I love that they're finding value professionally in that. And then that's transcending business.
Well, the most successful people surround themselves with people who know what they're doing. They don't claim to know it all.
Well, good leaders don't create followers. Good leaders create more leaders.
Right.
And that's what I'm doing.
Exactly.
And that's what we're trying to do. And so what I'm encouraging with the experience level is go find your leaders. Have lots of conversations. You asked me off air, like, well, what if you just don't know? Well, if you don't know, you're not having enough conversations. Talk to a lot of contractors, you know, a minimum 3.
But trust your instinct is what I said.
Talk to more architects. Minimum 3.
Right.
Talk to designers. Listen, I don't mind being interviewed or having to compete for a job. Right? Because I might not be the right fit for every job.
Right.
I know that. But I know the types of projects where I am a good fit. Okay? What I don't love is losing them to less experienced. Like, if I know the client's going to encounter problems up front based on maybe who they've assembled the team with already, I'm getting pretty good at going, yeah. I've played with a lot of players.
Right.
Where you sort of know, if you're a veteran player,
mm-hmm.
what that player is all about. And as you develop as a player and they develop differently as a player, you know whether or not there's a good fit there. Also, whether or not your skill sets are going to complement. That's part of the equation, is that when clients are interviewing you, you're also interviewing them and the way that they approach their project. I don't know that homeowners are aware of that. Maybe to the degree that they need to.
Right.
That there needs to be a much more open conversation up front about, you know, why we might not be a good fit. Not just, I'm trying to sell you the job.
Right. Well, that's...
And if I do it correctly, I won't have to.
The sales pitch.
Yeah. It shouldn't come off salesy. It should be like, this is what I do. This is who I am. This is our philosophy. This is my team.
Should be a passion pitch.
Yeah. And so I think... A passion pitch, and also then with process. Like, okay, what's your passion? And then what is your process look like to back that up?
Right.
Here's what I will tell you. When it comes to the design community and designers, decorators, design build individuals, all of those people, all of those different, I would say, not people, but all of those different, I don't know, segments of the same profession, the design profession, you know, if you hire somebody that primarily is really, really good at decoration and layering an aesthetic, there's a real liability to asking that person to then get involved at the design build. because all they know is end result.
Right.
All they know is the box they've been given and then taking the box they've been given and decorating that. Not experience building the box.
Right.
Okay.
Big difference.
Huge difference. And what frustrates a lot of builders about this process, architects as well, and why they make designer face when you want to bring in a designer, is because there are a lot of design professionals out there that have a real, that are wonderful at finishes, wonderful at furnishings, wonderful at layering beautiful spaces, but lack the construction knowledge
right.
to be able to shape the space.
Like, you can't put that there.
And as I read, or you shouldn't put that there. Yeah. Or what about putting it there to accentuate the finishing element of the space? Mm-hmm. And so one of the interesting things about what we do is we're able to bring that knowledge and experience to the table early to understand how to shape the box and then how to decorate the box. I have said to you before, if your design professional does not have experience, and I mean a lot of experience doing both, so design and decoration, which, by the way, are different. Decoration you can do over time. Design build you have to do while you're doing it.
Right.
Because you're not going to go back. And in fact, I have seen way too many trade-offs in design builds because the design professional leading that job didn't know enough and only was interested in making sure that the build got done as fast as possible to get to the finished product. So they could get to their core skill. You got to watch for that. You want a design professional that has done design builds, that has been at the table with the architect and the builder, hashing it out on paper in a great collaborative environment to be able to get everybody comfortable with the lifestyle outcome that the design provides you in plan. Because you've heard me say, I get so many incomplete plans that come my way after they've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on architectural plans. Incomplete electrical, incomplete mechanicals,
right.
Undeveloped kitchens and bathrooms, like stuff that's really like borderline industry malpractice. Okay. Because by the time the builder gets it, they can't even give an accurate bid because they don't even know what they're bidding.
Right.
And then they're guessing.
Right.
They're applying their finished experience and their finishing understanding to the bid. And then you wonder why your number's wrong and you get a million change orders. This is why I say you got to hire the design professional that's got design build and decoration experience early so that they can fight for the alignment of the vision as you move through the architectural and build process.
Right, from the beginning.
You bring me right. in and you bring us in too late. And so all we're left with is you almost reduce us to decorators because you didn't involve us early enough and we could have, man, the right design professional can help align the players in such a profound way, which is why we're ascending into almost like a creative owner's rep.
Yeah.
As we take on these projects, because the architect's going to bring their lens and we're calibrating that lens. Like, no, we don't want the same portico that you put on your last five houses. Okay. We don't want the same roofing materials or the same roofing color you put on your last three, because I've seen the Instagram and I know that they're across the country and maybe the client hasn't seen it, but we have. Like, how do we stretch you to get the version of the client's home, not the home you want to do? Same with the builder. We know you're very good at this. We value your expertise, but let's not just go with easy. Let's go with what's right. And remember, builders are only as good as the resources they bring to the table. And if they've never done something before or they've never installed the items that you're showing them in your preliminary mood board, and you get that wide-eyed like, tile, this is this. No, it's not.
Don't be the guinea pig.
No, yeah. Don't do that. And so the right design professional can really save you a ton of time ton of money.
That was going to be my next question. So outcome-wise, mm-hmm. at the end of the project, everything's great. Red carpet's been rolled out. Tape has been cut. Everybody's walking.
Okay, but it's more like a marathon. I've said this. It's more like crossing the marathon totally exhausted financially and mentally.
Well, this is true.
By the time you get there.
Doesn't everybody agree when the designer is brought in at the beginning and everybody has been cohesive throughout the process and learned from each other and all that?
The way that this has been solved in the industry is to take design in-house. Now, here's the liability with that. So in other words, you have an on-staff designer.
Right.
That's the way to get the design because you can control the outcome. Here's what happens. You get the alignment between the designer, the builder, and the architect all under one roof, you're just getting their version of what they do versus the creative independence of really exploring your vision
right.
versus theirs. But Nancy, that's inherent
another
in the industry
cutter.
Right now. Right? Well, not cookie cutter. I mean, listen, they're beautiful homes. But the reality is then you're leaning on the decoration to pull off the personality. Instead of putting the personality and baking it into the cake, you're relying on icing. Okay? You're relying on sprinkles and icing to carry the overall outcome. You
it
can't really do
sense.
That.
Right.
Decoration changes. Things break down. The build has to be the build. This is why when I say to you, millwork matters. And that the charm that you bake in at the beginning that you budget for, very rarely do clients do a new build and then put in millwork after the fact. They don't want the hassle. They move on with their life, they decorate, and then the next thing you know, they're left with the build to the experience and the creativity level of the builder and the architect, which, by the way, so many architects do not do field support. They'd make the drawing, they move on to the next drawing, and then at the end, I have always said, at least at the design coach, the person that's there with you from beginning to end, from dirt to drapery pin, and beyond is our team.
Right.
That is not a commercial for me. What that is a fact. It's a fact in the industry that you may have a cursory relationship or a nice friendly relationship with your builder and a nice friendly relationship with your architect after the fact because they did a nice job for you. But having the level of investment that we have at the Design Coach in the outcome is unmatched.
You know, the other thing that you haven't brought up is not just problem solving, but opportunities missed.
Oh my gosh,
during
that's
the
huge.
Thing. Okay, you're doing something, and I think you maybe even mentioned this mm-hmm. on the wine cellar thing that you did down in Florida, that you realized during the project, oh, we could do this. But you didn't really, and it was such an opportunity to make a bigger statement than what you were already making.
But let's circle back on that, because the experience level matters here.
Exactly.
Here's what the experience level allows you to do. Coach.
Right.
Align people. If you have the experience because you've done it before and you've pulled it off with another team, that's huge.
Right.
Don't be someone's first. Don't do that. And if you do that, And you want to take a flyer on somebody who hasn't done it before, make sure you surround them, okay, with other players who can make up for the experience gap. I don't mind that you want to hire someone less experienced because you like their aesthetic, and maybe they don't have the construction knowledge, and maybe you're like, well, my builder or my architect do. Please make sure that that's the case. And do you really want to risk your heirloom build? I mean, to me, that's too big a risk to take.
Right.
When you're building a 4 to 5, you know, listen, even any home, actually, any project, it's too big a risk. Your investment means more. And it should mean more to the people who are on your team, which means the experience level. And again, I love that we had this discussion today, but we've only scratched the surface. Mm-hmm. When you're looking for experience, ask the questions. Talk about the creative, financial, and the battles that these people have been through and what they learned from them. The contractors, the architects, and the design professionals that can articulate that the best are going to give you the best read.
And are willing.
Oh, they're willing to share that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can tell my clients where I failed, and I can tell them where I've succeeded, and it's been more success than failure.
Right.
We're not perfect. Man, do we have a passion for getting people what they need and making their outcomes come to life. Anyway, have a happy Sunday, everybody. You've been listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. You've been coached.